Hello, this is Luis Mandoki, Director of Message in a Bottle.
Hello, I'm Denise DeNovi. I'm a producer, and I'll be joining you later in the film to talk about some of the scenes.
So, I got involved in the picture because my agent called me one day. He said, Kevin Costner is starring in Message in a Bottle. It's a book by Nicholas Sparks, and he wants you to read the script. So, I said, well, I hope I really like it, and I usually am very picky about what scripts I direct, so I read the script. I actually loved it and met with Kevin. We were very much in sync of what we wanted to do with the film. One thing I said was, I think the character of your father, Dodge, is actually a missed opportunity, I think. And he grinned, and I said, what are you grinning about? And he said, well, I agree with you, and I actually have already done the work with Jerry DiPego, the screenwriter. A new draft is coming in a couple of days. I'd like you to look at it. And then he said, what do you think of Paul Newman playing the father? And I just grinned and I thought, wow, that would be a dream. So we got the draft and it was actually really great. We sent it to Paul. Kevin called him and he decided to become involved. And then we started talking about who to play the character of Teresa. And we started going through the list. And then Kevin said, instead of talking about who first, why don't we talk about what is it that we're looking for? And so I said, I think we need an actress that's really going to play a full-rounded woman and not the typical girl, but really a woman with depth. And also, the character needed a lot of luminosity and sense of humor to bring Garrett, the character that Kevin plays, out of this shell in which he's been ensconced and lost. And so I said to Kevin, I think the person who can play this is Robin Wright Penn. And he said he really liked her, too. And so we sent her the script, we met with her, and that's how the main cast came together. Then we had to cast the rest of the roles. Catherine's family, Garrett's dead's wife family, which had to be really good actors with pathos, and on the other hand, the newsroom people, which I felt we needed to contrast that with good actors, but also with a lot of sense of humor. I thought the movie had to play with a lot of laughter to balance the difficult moments and the painful scenes. And so I think a really well-balanced cast came out of it. We cast a lot of actors out of New York, out of the theater. The kid, we auditioned a lot of boys.
Love you. Bye.
It's hard, you know, finding boys that can play natural. And Jesse James got the role. He's a really natural for this. Acting-wise, he's not one of those acting kind of kids. Then also the question of who should be the cinematographer. And this movie had a lot of exteriors, and I thought the movie needs a very inspiring, beautiful, visual beauty to it. And I thought of Caleb Deschanel because of his brilliant work with movies like Black Stallion and The Right Stuff, the movie being there with Peter Sellers and his diversity of style, and I thought he could really bring an amazing look to the film. So I met with him. Took a while to convince him to do the film, but he eventually, we actually hit it off very strongly, and that's how he got involved. That's him, because then I couldn't find the role for the guy to play this guy in the B&B, the financial consultant who actually flirts with Robin in the beginning. And one day we were actually shooting one of the scenes in the newsroom, and I looked at him and he said, you know, you're perfect to play this role. He said, but I'm going to blush. I said, that's exactly what I need. So he wasn't used to being in front of the cameras. This was his first acting role. And then the other big question was, who was going to do the music? And I thought of Gabriel Yared because of The English Patient and that kind of lush, romantic quality he has, but also with depth and not your typical cliche kind of score. The production designer, Jeffrey Beecroft, came aboard kind of at the beginning. The first time I met Kevin, he had actually worked with Jeffrey on Dances with Wolves and in The Bodyguard. And he brought up his name, and he was one of the guys I had always been trying to work with, and he was always unavailable. So that came together very easily. Then the question became of where to shoot the film. I took off with Jeffrey Beecroft in December of 97. We scouted the whole Eastern Seaboard, and you know, the Carolinas, when we went there, had just been hit by hurricanes, and they looked kind of depressing. And we were looking for a really original and beautiful place, and many beaches that we found looked like you put a house there and it's just going to look phony.
Dear Catherine, I'm sorry I haven't talked to you.
We finally found a great location, which was in Virginia, an island called Tangier, which was a very untouched island. No movies had ever been made there. They had no commercial stores or chains or anything. And we're going to shoot there, and 3 weeks before we started, they sent us a script rejecting the permission to do it there because they said we had too many scenes with kissing and with beer in them. And they turned out to be a really, really conservative religious community. So they turned us down, and this is really, I mean, this movie is no Basic Instinct, so it was quite a surprise to get that kind of turn down. So Jim Wilson, who's one of the producers in the film, said, why don't we go to Maine, because I shot a movie there, Head Above Water. I know the place, and I think I can show you some locations that you're going to really like. So we went there, and absolutely, I mean, we found incredible locations. And the question is, we have to shoot them in a way that audiences are going to buy them as North Carolina. So we had to be careful not to show too many rugged, rocky kind of beaches and stuff.
And to tell you I'm sorry about some of them.
And to my surprise, when we started screening the film, a lot of people from out of bounds, I showed the film to them, and they accepted it fully. Also, the question of with Caleb came up about shooting it 185 versus anamorphic. Anamorphic is widescreen. I thought because of so many landscape shots and vistas, anamorphic would be great to give this kind of look. And so we talked about Super 35 versus anamorphic, and he right away said anamorphic, I mean, you get a much stronger quality to it. Also, you have bigger limitations in terms of focus, and you need more lighting.
That is so sick.
And then the whole question about the newsroom. This is the newsroom that represents the Chicago Tribune. So we went to the Chicago Tribune. We saw their actual newsroom, what it looked like. We could never shoot there because we would stop the paper from working for 3 weeks. And so we opted to actually build it.
Anyway, I know what you want.
I wanted a big room where you would feel this ocean of anonymity, and where the characters get lost, like, you know, like in an urban setting. Basically, I wanted to contrast her world, her Chicago world of the city, to his personal world of boat building shops and sailing, which is a much warmer, intimate world.
Really? Came back a day early.
And so basically, Jeffrey Beecroft came up with this design. Then the question came up in terms of budget and how to spend the money. Also, we decided to go with a lot of glass to have this kind of interrupted, infinite visual style, which was a challenge for the cameraman because he didn't have a lot of places to light. So all the ceilings, all that fluorescent light became actual practical lightings for him, which he used fluorescent with tungsten to balance it out so that we could actually just use some floor lights to balance and fill the faces. And then the whole question of her apartment. We found the exterior in Chicago, but because of the schedule, we couldn't shoot the interior there. So this actual apartment, what we found in Portland, Maine, we needed a cover set because we had a lot of rainy or cloudy days where we couldn't shoot outside. So we needed a cover set, so we found this apartment. The problem with this location was that it was an old place, had a lot of creaking on the floors, and I was concerned with actual sound problems. I didn't want to do any looping. We had a great sound mixer, Jose Garcia, and I must say that at the end of the day, we ended up practically not looping anything.
Teresa, it's not your letter.
Yeah, I know it's not my letter.
So, her apartment was divided into three locations. The exterior, which we shot in Chicago, and the interior, which was divided. That what we just saw was the living room and the kitchen, which we shot in that location in Portland. And then the bedroom, which we actually built in a warehouse in Maine, in Bath, where we were shooting all of the beach and all of Garrett's world. Another concern that we all had was the fact that the movie goes for, in the script it went for about 40 minutes before Therese and Garrett actually meet. So Kevin Costner was actually coming to the picture to about 40 minutes in. So all this setup about finding the letters and tracking the letters down and finally deciding to go and find them took a long time. And we actually took some scenes out because we felt they were just repetitive. When we first started screening the film, that's where the film started to feel a little lagging and long. So we basically shortened to its barest bones. I tried to bring in these characters of Robbie Coltrane, who plays Charlie. He's a great star in England, but very underexposed in America. And Ileana Douglas, who's also a great actress. And I cast them also because of their quality and because of the sense of humor they brought to the movie, which I thought would be very good to pace up the beginning of the movie and to set a tone of excitement and a tone of anticipation.
Dear Catherine, there isn't an hour of my life without you in it. I mend the boats, test them.
And then the other thing was the reading of the letters. First of all, the writing of the letters had to be very compelling. We did a lot of work in terms of that. It had to really hit home. In the sense that, in terms of his words, really have an effect. It's like she's gone through a divorce. Her husband has left her for another woman. And she's just buried in her work and her career and doesn't want to deal with the pain of it. And she finds a guy, a man actually, who also lost a woman, and he's dealing with the pain and he's expressing the pain. He's not talking about it with somebody else, but he's throwing these letters to the sea. But the way he just talks about his feelings in such a raw and naked way makes her realize that she's not dealing with her own, and somehow makes her feel connected to something and inspires her enough to go and try and find them. This was a search montage in which we had to tell the story of how she finds them. This was a little location where it was not worth to go to a location, so we built this set next to the newsroom on the same stage. We had to tell this story in a fluid way. Actually, I did a very detailed shooting script in pre-production before we started shooting, and I felt that the movie needed dynamics to it, so I tried to keep the camera moving as much as possible to keep the story interesting from a visual point of view.
I'm sending you Polaroids.
And at the same time, we couldn't linger too much on this part of the story. I felt we have to tell just enough.
Oh, that sounds great.
And then bring us as fast as possible to the beginning of the romance.
Nice to talk to you.
Hang up. Chase, hang on 1 second.
What?
Remember the letter that mentions the message from a bottle on the restaurant wall in Virginia? Okay, the stationery, the logo, and the typewriter.
So, the question with the performances at this stage in the movie was to find the right balance between the honest performances and the humor. And Ileana was an amazing improviser that brought a lot of laughs into the film. And Robin just had an amazing range. Whatever I asked of her, she just hit it on the nail. And the other question was, how much of the reading of the letters so that it engages the audience enough, but it doesn't become all just wordy and boring. So, for example, in this scene, we had the choice of reading the whole third letter, which is the big turning point in the movie, in the third act. So when we shot this, I had Robin read the whole letter, not knowing how it was going to work when we were in the editing room. At the end of the day, we just used half of the letter, where Charlie interrupts her and she just doesn't go back to it because he's not a very receptive audience to it. And then let the letter, that third letter that Catherine wrote, become revealed later in the movie. So this was practically the last scene before she actually takes off to North Carolina.
Well, I don't know, I'm not sure. But I'm
the next scene that follows is where she finds out the address, which prompts her to go. And originally it was scripted at an airport. She's taking off, but she didn't know where to go. It didn't make sense to me. And also from a production point of view, it helped me with my schedule to actually shoot in the newsroom. So we adapted that scene to be shot there, and then she just takes off, and the journey begins.
This is research.
You're thinking Heathcliff. You're thinking Hamlet. And this guy is probably Captain Ahab.
Are you saying that I can't go?
This was also a very important scene in terms of the relationship between her and Charlie. Charlie's her boss and has a secret love for her. And so he's upset that she's going on a limb to find this guy. And at the same time, I wanted to keep the humor alive. And so it took a lot of takes and a lot of coverage to find that balance. There were scenes that where I did a lot of coverage and others where I just basically played it all in one shot with a moving camera, sometimes with a static camera.
Over the phone. You got him, Teresa. Now go knock on his door.
So we're off on the trip. This was my transition shot to the airplane. I was always trying to look for fluid transitions to keep the audience surprised. We found this location in Maine that actually felt like the Outer Banks. Again, how much of a trip you play, we had a much longer sequence, but we felt we can do with a shorthand to get her to the place and to start revealing this other world, a world which is not familiar to her, which is not where she feels comfortable. And this is also the reveal for Paul Newman. As it was scripted, we don't see him until later when she actually is about to knock on the door. But I thought that that was a better way to reveal him as she leaves frame and suddenly we see him coming out of the background. He works repairing motors. You know, you always think about how to reveal a star in the film, like Paul Newman.
Can I help you?
Sorry, I just admire these older homes.
You in real estate?
No.
This scene, basically, we came to it in the afternoon. We had only 4 hours of light left. And
can I say yes or no?
Thank God I had this kind of actress because we shot three different sizes to keep the variety of the scene going. And at the same time, they just hit it off very, very fast.
Where's the hat?
And we were able to...
Thank you.
...to pull it off before the day ended, before we started losing the light.
I always admired your covers. Never bought the magazine, though. Well, there's always tomorrow.
The way these lines were scripted were different, were in a very logical order. And Paul and Robin, as we were rehearsing, came up with the idea of changing the order and making it funnier and more surprising and more unpredictable. She comes and thinks this is the guy, and it turns out that it's kind of disappointing. This guy, I had actually cast somebody else, and 2 days before we shot the scene, that guy got a bigger job, so he couldn't come to the location. So this guy was Paul Newman's double in the movie, his stand-in. We read several guys, and I auditioned him, and he turned out to be a good actor. So I chose him to play this role, and at the beginning he was a little nervous, and with actors that are not used to playing bigger roles, that are more extras or stand-ins, my feeling is you don't tell them anything is wrong, you just give them a lot of confidence, you tell them they're doing great, and you just start planting ideas and different emphasis so they start gaining confidence, and that's how it happened with him. And he got really loose at the end of the day. So this is the first scene where she actually finds Kevin Costner. This scene actually was, I believe it was 5 pages, long scene. And it was a challenge. How do you keep this scene interesting? And also it's the reveal of him, and it's the first time they meet, and somehow something has to happen. But the weather in Maine kept changing on us. We were shooting the scene, and suddenly, half an hour later, it was all fogged up. So we had to go off and shoot another scene with fog, which is a later scene where she comes after the diner and they go sailing. So this scene we had to shoot over the course of 3 days. It was a big challenge also for Caleb to keep matching the light. We had to move the boat to different positions. Like, this moment was actually not next to the docks when we see Robin. We had to move it around to keep the lighting in continuity. And it's amazing when you look at it, how it all matches.
Doubt it. You a tourist?
I'm just getting acquainted with the place.
Shooting on the docks was actually quite a challenge too, because these docks were actually floating docks, so they didn't have a lot of stability. So what we had to do was bring in a 40-foot barge, metal barge, where we put all our dollies and crane, and at the same time we had to keep moving it around where we were according to our different camera positions. But also here in Maine we had a tide that moved 8 feet up and down through the day. So sometimes, you know, in the beginning of the day the tide was down, and by noon or 2 o'clock it was 8 foot high, so we had to find the right angles to be shooting through the day so we wouldn't tell the lack of continuity of how we were up and down according to where we were on land.
Thank you.
So we had a crane that we could build and make it moving whatever way we wanted, but it took time. It took time to set up, it took time to move the barge, and sometimes when the tide came down you just couldn't move the barge anymore, it was stuck to the mud. So you had to plan all that in advance, and so your angles had to be planned also according to the light. You know, we were always trying to shoot against the light, which is what gives you this backlit beauty, beautiful feeling of it. When you shoot just against the light, everything flattens out. So that's the challenge of shooting exteriors and with tides, that you have to plan all your shots and way in advance, and many times you have to shoot out of continuity and know where you are with the acting so that you don't miss the opportunities.
Here's your shot.
Now, the movie had a lot of tone changes, which was good, but also a challenge, so that it kept a feeling of unity, and it didn't feel like another movie. This scene, you know, has a violent tone to it, and it brings a subplot of Catherine's family into the movie. And we locked out in terms of this particular days. We got fogged outside, and it was perfect for this scene.
Well, you ain't right if the courts say you ain't right, right?
And at the same time, sometimes the light changed a lot outside, so we had to shoot again. You know, Johnny's direction, we could control the light a bit more because we weren't seeing the water. But when we shot this way, the fog changed, and so we had to get all our shots out of the way as fast as possible before we lost the fog.
I say
different. You're a liar, John.
This scene took about 2.5 days to shoot. Basically, because we had a lot of coverage, the fight scene took a lot of shots. And we were using basically extras from the place. So they were not professional extras. And every time you set up and bring them back to position and make sure they're not looking at camera, and sometimes you just lose that kind of takes because of stupid reasons like that. This is the moment where she realizes that there's a darker side to this man that she didn't know about, and it doesn't get revealed till later. And so, in spite of it, she decides to come and see him. And this is the scene I was talking about, that we have to keep changing back and forth. This was a foggy scene, which we shot the same day that we shot the sunny scene. It's amazing that in one day you get this kind of different weathers. And because the weather changed so fast.
I'm sorry you saw that.
This shot, for example, I just got one take. That was my take. And I had to get the performance right on one take. And we couldn't do any more. Now, for example, here you'll see a dolly shot. This dolly shot was done from a barge.
It's a short sail.
On this crane.
I don't know, you know, what if you got...
And it was amazing the kind of stability you got off from that barge. We had an amazing key grip, Dickie Dietz, who has been doing movies since the time of Hitchcock. He kept telling me stories of that time, amazing stories.
Appreciate it.
You know, as a director, you're only as good as your team. And I was lucky to have a great team also.
Thanks.
We had a great focus pooler. But I will go into the focus problems, which are big when you're shooting anamorphic, when we have good scenes to talk about it. So then we had a transition from this scene, motoring out of the harbor, to the next one, which is where they're sailing, and I wanted the sailing to be a sunny day, and so we had to, at the time we were wondering, will the transition work from this kind of cloudy weather to sunny, but then you put it together and it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. This scene was actually shot from another boat. We were using a Steadicam. It was the fastest way to do it. If we had put another, either crane or tripod on it, it would have taken us a lot of time. Every time we needed to do another take, we had to bring the boat back all the way, and that took about half an hour. Shooting in the water is just such a slow process. So this sequence was done actually in two different locations. These shots were shot in Maine in the course of many days. Some of these shots were done with doubles, and it's amazing how you just believe it. But this scene, this dialogue scene, was shot in California, because we never got the right weather when we were in Maine to shoot it. And at the end, we just had to come back and shoot it here and make it match.
I might be able to help you. I have a degree. So what you said?
So the dialogue part of the scene was done off the marina in Los Angeles. And we shot this, most of it, most of these dialogue shots in the boat.
Okay.
We had a camera wired to the boat.
Nope.
And we tried to do some boat-to-boat scenes.
I have a son.
Which we used in the latter part when they're sailing back. These shots when we saw the dailies didn't match at all what we had shot in Maine. But it's amazing, I mean, with a DP like Caleb and Technicolor, which was our lab, we had a great timer there. And it's amazing the kind of work they did. This is a second unit shot, and those guys are not Kevin and Robin. And we had a great second unit guy who did some of these shots, Gary Capo, who did a lot of the shots on wind. This is Kevin and Robin, and we were shooting boat to boat, and this is an aerial shot, shot from a helicopter. This is boat to boat. So it was very tricky. We had to plan all these shots very carefully. When we were in rehearsal, this scene was actually scripted as they're in the kitchen drinking beer. And Kevin came up with the idea, what if he's cutting my hair? And I thought, oh, that's a great idea. Then when I talked about it with Paul, he said, you know, a guy like me, I would never do that. I would never touch Kevin. I would never touch my son. That's too intimate. And I said, yeah, but that's why you do this, because that's the only way to kind of be close. And these two guys are like monkeys. They just, they don't go to the barbershop and pay a couple of bucks to do that. And this is their way of being close to each other. So, you know, when Paul Newman says to you, I think my character would never do that, you really think about it. So I really did a lot of soul searching, and at the end of the day, I decided, no, this is a great idea. We should stick with it, and we're going to do it. So I told Paul, I heard you, and I still feel we should do this. So, you know, he's a pro, and he agreed to it. And at the end, I thought, you go with your instincts.
Here's your jacket. Jackets like that don't come along every week, you know.
This is one of my favorite scenes in the film. I remember the day we shot it, Luis, when I think we both realized that the chemistry between these two actors was really going to work in the film.
Right. The big question in the movie was chemistry in any love story, you know? And yes, I mean, basically, it was not only the chemistry, but the way they played the scene with the awkward pauses. And suddenly it was like this relationship and the scene just took a life of its own.
Yeah, the theme of the movie really became evident to me that day, and it does in this scene, that these are two wounded, lonely people that very tentatively reach out to each other in a very healing way. You know, it's where the idea that love can heal all wounds really became became evident to me. And as you say, I think, you know, Luis, you and the actors really did a great job of making this relationship seem real. You know, when people are getting together, most people are very afraid and, you know, very sensitive about protecting themselves. And I think you sense that in the scene and the way they played it.
I have no idea what to say. And I'm wondering why you're here, because you don't know what to say.
Since the editor, Scott, this was one of the scenes that we barely did much work to it afterwards. It just clicked. He really caught it, feeling the timing, the pauses, the silences. And it was also one of the scenes that when we first previewed the film,
people loved it. This moment right here where he talks about the steak and says, do you eat meat? gets a huge laugh. And I remember the first time we saw the film in the audience when people just roared with laughter at that moment. It was really exciting. And this great look that Robin gives is, here it is. It's people love it. But it's just, it's very sweet. I think it's, it's one of those moments between two people that just melt your heart.
Right. And that's where the chemistry became very evident. Like moments like this.
Where they just look at each other in their eyes.
Yes.
What time?
6.
Okay.
I mean, that's a great actor. I know you've experienced it before as well, when there's no dialogue and just the look in their eyes communicates everything.
It's got to be on the water, right?
Right. Everything's on the water.
And it was that mixture of sweetness and not knowing what was going to happen. And it was just right on the edge. So this scene is where she first comes to this date that he invites her to. There were two scenes in the script between these two where he goes sailing in the bad weather and he has a flashback of Catherine that I dropped in the editing because I thought it just stopped the love story from going.
You found it.
Yeah.
And this location was the hardest location to find. I had a hard time finding a place where we could plant the house, and it would feel like it was a lived-in place, and it felt like a community. And finally, when Jim Wilson took us to Maine, we saw this area, and we saw this actual place, but the house was different. It was a much smaller house. Impossible to shoot. It was like 6 by 8 feet. It was really minuscule. And so the production team had to negotiate with the lady who owned the house, and they offered her, you know, we're going to rebuild your house. We're going to make it a much bigger and beautiful house.
Wow, I love this.
And on top of it, you know, you just keep it. So she accepted it.
Is it a local?
I met her and she said, you know, it's like I actually won the lottery. And in 3 weeks, our construction team just built it up and decorated it, and it was amazing.
I'm sorry.
This is the first scene where they're actually together in this intimate place. And so we're building from the awkwardness from the previous scene. She starts seeing objects that make sense, the bottles, that connects to, this is the guy who actually sent these letters to the sea. And she starts finding this nook that he left untouched since Catherine's death.
No.
My dad died when I was in college.
And basically the challenge was, how do you build a romance in terms of how you build a first date scene that feels realistic, that you buy that in 5 minutes of screen time this couple starts coming so close and revealing intimate stuff about themselves. And so it was very delicate. It was delicate finding the right moments and the right rhythm to feel the evolvement of this coming together. And then capturing the moments in the right light that evoke the beauty and the romanticism of the place.
Hey, Garrett. Look, I was...
So this is the moment where Teresa tries to tell him about the letters.
But...
And... finally can't. When we were shooting, we first shot the two shot, and
I just
I was asked, you know, do you really need the coverage on the scene?
What?
The two shot plays really well, and it did play well, and that's one of the hard decisions you make as a director. Do I spend the time that the coverage is going to take when you actually have a lot of stuff to do? But because of the pauses, I just felt, you know, what if the rhythm is too slow, and if I don't have coverage, there's no way I'm going to be able to alter the rhythm, and then I'm stuck with it. So, you know, in spite of all the pressure, I decided I'm going to shoot the coverage, and thank God, because we would have been dead. Yeah. But those things you don't know until you're in the editing room. The only thing you know is if you don't have it, you'll never get it.
But maybe I didn't even think about it, because I had my son, my work, my husband. I was on my way to becoming a writer.
So this is the scene where she just has this long monologue about what happened to her, how she broke up with her husband, how she discovered that he was actually being unfaithful to her. And again, I had this kind of actors that held the shot. So I had these long takes with a camera very slowly moving, very slowly creeping in.
It was a second. And I knew.
And letting the words unfold and the emotions come out and start bringing them together.
So you're faced with the impossible. And
we also questioned whether we should shoot this night or during the day, blacking out the windows. And both Caleb Deschanel and me felt we should shoot it at night, otherwise the windows are just going to look flat and black. And you see all those shadows in the background, which is the actual location. Mm-hmm. We did shoot it at night, and it did add, I think, a lot to
right?
the mood of the place and the mood of the scene. That line that Kevin said, we actually had to loop because the fireplace was not a working fireplace, so they had gas coming out of it and a lot of noise coming out. And so you had this gas noise going on while he talks, and we had to actually loop it. But those were the little things we had to loop in this movie. It was actually very little.
Tell me about Catherine.
Then, you know, the sound effects that you hear, like the frogs and the crickets, all that was added in post-production. Bruce Stemmler did the sound design, and he enriched all the atmospheres, brought it to the right degree in a very delicate way, but made it rich and alive.
Whole room, whole town. I called her Saint Catherine.
Then putting music to the scene was not an easy thing. When we tried, you know, strings, it just felt like very sappy and melodramatic, over the top. When we tried it without any music, it felt too dry, almost like a Bergman film. And finally we came up with this kind of improvised lyrical piano that accompanies this moment, in which they're also kind of improvising and finding their way through to each other.
My mom hated it here. She took me away to Virginia.
This was the first intimate scene between them, and probably was the scene where I was most worried and concerned about, because you never know if there's going to be chemistry between your leading actors. And if there isn't any chemistry, you're dead in the water, in a romance. And so you shoot the scene, you get the right performances, and you still, you're not sure, you know, you feel it, but you're not sure. And then I asked my editor, put the scene together as fast as possible. I want to see it come together in a rough way. And I saw it the next day, and I was, God, I'm so relieved, because it was working. Actually, at the end of the scene, they kissed. And so when we first saw the first cut put together, Kevin said to me, you know, I really think that my character wouldn't kiss her that first night, especially being so close to Catherine's nook and it's her house. So we experimented with it, and we cut out the kiss, and we saw how the whole thing worked together without it. So in a way, the tension of not having them kissing just builds and builds and builds, and when it finally happens, it's a big release. That was a very interesting thing. This moment was important. I wanted to make sure that it was obvious that they didn't make love that first night, that it was just these two frail people coming together, slowly, cautiously, and that it didn't become like, okay, now let's just do it tonight. And so after this scene, we had a few scenes that we shot that were in the script that they were having breakfast in the morning, watching the sunrise, and once you put it together, you start seeing where all the shoe leather is, and you didn't need it. So we took him out. And so this is the first time we go into his workplace, the boathouse. For me, this place had to feel like the temple of his creation.
That was the plan. This was going to be my signature boat, the one we'd never sell.
Caleb did an amazing job lighting it, and we talked about whether we should do it with warm light or with colder light. So he said, I'll light it in a way where we can decide that to go warmer or colder when we're doing the actual timing of the movie. And we, at the end of the day, we decided to go colder. We thought it worked better. That moment with Kevin, when I saw it in dailies, that smile that he has, I thought, that's what makes him a star. Not everybody has that amazing charisma and warmth, and he just shines on the screen. And then when we were blocking the scene, after the kiss that's going to happen, she just did this okay, which was not scripted. Everybody on the set was giggling. At the time, I didn't know if it was too light for the moment, but at the end of the day, we kept it.
Well, that's a mistake.
Paul Newman was just amazing. I mean, every scene he's in, he just brings an amazing force of life into the movie and a lot of humor. And the chemistry between Paul and Kevin also turned out to be great. I mean, they really felt like father and son.
Go easy.
All right, just hold it right there.
Stay out of our way.
And again, this scene was a five-page scene. When we first cut it, it lasts about 4.5 minutes. And it felt out of proportion with the whole film, and we cut it down. It's the confrontation between Catherine's family and Garrett. It's where the whole issue about the paintings comes to a head. In the original schedule, we had scheduled it for 3 days shooting, and then we had to cut it down to 2 days. So we used three cameras. And what's hard when you're using three cameras and scenes like that is that your points of view, your eye lines, where you place the camera, is not very accurate. So, at the end of the day, most of the shots I used was from camera A, basically, because all the others, you didn't get the right perspective on the looks and the faces.
Just set it down, guys.
Step aside.
My God.
Again, like in the diner scene when Johnny first comes, the tone of the scene was a question. And so I shot a lot of coverage because you could play it either very, very violent or down the middle. And that's something you don't know exactly where it should be until you see the whole movie put together.
Now I want something to remember her by. A piece of this will go.
We had a whole section of the scene after this moment. A cop arrives and he basically dilutes the whole situation. But once we started seeing the movie together, we realized it was not necessary. And we found a way to just cut it out.
Crazy people.
They're only half the war.
The paintings were done by different people. Yeah. The production designer, basically.
Yeah, I'm pretty good too.
We didn't have a lot of time. And so we found different painters, different artists that had similar styles. And we told them kind of the kind of paintings we were looking for. And some of them, we got a lot of paintings that we just turned down that they either didn't work or weren't beautiful enough. But the paintings were what brought into the movie Catherine's spirit, so it was something very important. And you know, this is the moment where you see how this man is just consumed by this past and can't get over it. When I heard the score, I felt, wow, Gabriel Yared really captured the soul of this film. I mean, the music just brought it to another level. And then, when we shot this scene, we wanted this kind of light, the end of the day light, and we just had 2 hours to do it. So we put a crane again on a barge. And in my original shooting script, I had about 6 shots, which I simplified to 3, which we resolved in this movement with the camera tilting up to reveal Garrett arriving instead of as a cut. And it really worked very beautifully. And then the sailing out, we did it in different days, at the end of days. And again, I felt this is a moment to open up the movie and to feel the power of nature, the power of the beauty of a place. And so this is the first moment when they're out sailing together, but as opposed to the first time where they're just exploring and finding out who each other is, here there starts to be a bit of a bigger commitment. This scene was shot against green screen. The reason was, if we shot it at night in the sea, it would just be them against black. You know, a little pool of light for the boat and the rest. You know, how can you light the ocean? You can't. So we decided to go green screen and then use these plates as moonlight. And the plates were shot at sunrise. So they were actually day plates, which we treated and added clouds to them and the reflection of the moon. And the movement on the plates to feel the movement of the boat. So we were about 30 feet off the ground in the studio shooting this scene at Warner Brothers. And so a lot of work from CineSight took place to create this effects, this background. That scene, for example, again, we had them kissing at the end, and we decided to cut that out and let it continue building in a softer, more subtle way. And then this montage was the first time they kind of start having fun together, where the rhythm of the movie changes and joy starts kicking in, and the joy of romance and of falling in love. There was a lot of improvisation in this. I mean, we had what scenes we were shooting, but a lot of improvisation took place. And again, in these scenes, you're just always rushing against time. And so you use several cameras. So I wanted to bring a feeling of not only what they do, but also the place they're in. And so I added this aerial shot, the second unit shot, to convey this beauty in which they are. And then this next shot was actually shot in California at the end of that day when we shot the dialogue scene. And this little shot took a lot of rigging of lights. I mean, to light all that background, that was the village. And there were several hours of lighting for that little moment. This was the first scene in the relationship where things start to go sour, where there's the beginning of a conflict.
Hi.
Actually, the way we originally shot her and it was scripted, she was sitting at the drawing table. And when we saw the film, we thought maybe it looks like she's too insensitive. So we actually started the scene when she's just starting to get up, so it didn't feel like that. And I had to capture the details that told the story, the fact that he was very anal about it and he had to put every little thing in the right place to understand why he was bothered about what she had been doing. It's the first time that somebody else, a third person, invaded this private space of him and his dead wife.
Sorry. Let me get it. Let me clean it up.
So I shot it in a static camera way because I needed to just get all the little details that would make it patent of what was happening. And in terms of the performance, it's finding the right tone where it was not that there was somebody good and somebody bad. It was just two misunderstandings of two people who liked each other. And then Dodge, Paul Newman, coming in to save the day.
Yeah, that's me.
This was another scene where we were fighting the sunlight.
I don't know.
We started rehearsing the scene at midday. The light was horrible. So we decided to plan it very well and set it all up so that when the light was right, we could just shoot it fast.
Why didn't he inherit that charm?
You had a fight. That's a good sign.
I made a mistake. I moved something out of its place.
It was, again, a scene where these two characters that don't know each other at the same time find a common language in a very fast way. And he knows what his son is going through.
Come on inside.
And wants to help him in whatever way he can. And Paul kept bringing moments, fresh moments of improvisation like this one.
He won't tell you much.
Which got a laugh when we started showing it to audiences. And then this dialogue scene, which was like a walk and talk. It was a long expositional dialogue scene. And so I decided to find a way to shoot it, to capture also the beauty of the place, so that it wouldn't be just two talking heads. We used very long lenses, 600 millimeter lens, a lot of the time. So we were very far away from the actors.
Kept her there.
And we used wireless mics.
She was glad too.
To get the dialogue. We thought we would never get the sound to be saved because of the ocean sound, the wave noise. But again, our great mixer saved the day. And basically, it was a longer scene, and a lot of the dialogue when we saw the finished film wasn't necessary. So with all our angles, we were able to shorten it. This moment again was something that Paul came up when we were shooting the scene. I actually started the scene in a 3-shot. That was the first shot we did, and he didn't do that in that, so that's why I started with the close-ups, because I thought that that color was worth it to bring into the scene. But the chemistry between the three was just so much fun.
You'd like that though, wouldn't you? Keep your eye on me. He's afraid I'm going to go back to my old habits.
Anybody want any cake?
I used to drink like a fish. It ruined my health. It's no deep, dark secret.
Yeah, well, it's no citizen award either.
2 beers a day.
You know, you put the camera and you let the scene play, and with such great actors, the timing and everything just flowed in an amazing way. The blocking of Kevin going to the kitchen and Paul getting up just came out in the first rehearsal, and I thought that worked really well.
Where are you going?
That's how I first envisioned the scene, and then when they played it, they did it the same. So sometimes just things are very organic and everybody's on the same page. But Paul going to the beach with a dessert, that came out of him. That was his idea. And I thought it was great. It was like letting these guys have their own private moment, this kind of respect. And then once they were together alone, and they came to this intimate moment, that's where I started moving the camera slowly, creeping in on both angles, on both sides, just getting the feeling of getting closer and closer and closer, in spite of the conflict, in spite of the obstacles.
I wish it was simpler.
And the sound of the birds and the surf were brought in post-production again. But it was in this, in the looks and in that intimate feeling that you kept feeling, oh, there's the chemistry between these two is just great. This, we shot another day. It was a scene, you know, a sunset scene. We shot it, we laid the tracks, we were ready for when the light was right, and then we shot it at several different lights, and you never know which is the one that's going to look better visually once you look at the dailies.
I'm not expecting flowers.
So we did about 4 takes, and when you see it, it's just obvious which one is the right one.
Hoping for flowers.
This scene, we shot all of it with a Steadicam, to be able to be fast with it and correct for the light and move with the actors. It was a very important scene. It was the first goodbye. And it needed to have that spontaneous quality to it. And what's going to happen now? Again, we were fighting the elements, the wind, hitting the microphones. And I hoped it was going to be one of the big kiss scenes of the movie, and you really never know how it's going to turn out. So the first take we did, Kevin comes in and kisses her, and then they separate and she gets in the car and leaves. And suddenly I just got this hit, and I told Robin, you know, as you were going to open the door to the car, you should just launch back and kiss him again for the second time, to get this feeling of yearning, of not wanting to go. So she said, oh, great, and this is when it happened. And it was great. And Kevin, after I said cut, he said to Robin, great instincts. And she laughed, and I laughed. And also, when I said cut, the sound mixer yelled from the distance, nice! And Kevin said, what was that? He said, this is the first sound mixer that I had that reacts so emotionally to my acting. So everybody was laughing. It was one of those days where you feel everything is coming together in the right way. Then the boathouse sequences, the ones without Robin in them, we had a day to shoot them. This scene, we actually shot it at midnight, and we had to do it all in half an hour. Caleb had to light it in 15 minutes. We had to resolve this one in one shot because of time constraints. That's all the things that go into, you know, you're working with schedule and a budget, and you have to get things done. But things started just flowing together in spite of the limitations.
No wonder it returns. How are you?
Okay.
Yeah. So, solve your mystery?
There was.
And then, before the scene, we had a scene where she comes home,
and
her ex-husband brings the kid back.
Right. So
and they have a dialogue between them where she claims about alimony and he not giving money. And
so
it was a whole subplot to the movie that, again, when we saw the movie together, we felt, you know, who cares? Who cares about that story? So we cut it out and we saw how it played, and we realized we really don't need it, you know? The movie doesn't need that. That's not our core love story. And then we had to create the time of separation between them, where she doesn't know what's going to happen, where we don't know if they're going to come back together and how they're going to talk again. And so we designed this series of shots to create a montage of the building, the process of his building of the boat, while she's going on with her life, and try to find interesting, beautiful shots that would tell the story and at the same time evoke the separation and the love between them. This scene, we just got lucky because we decided to shoot it at the end of the day to get this kind of beautiful backlight, and it was a gorgeous day. And the scenes in the office, again, I kept with this fluid camera movements. We had a boat builder consultant to help us know how the process of building the boat was and the stages, and to show Kevin what to do and how to do it, and so that we would actually believe he was a boat builder. It's an art, the process of boat building, and it was a really detailed instruction for us. Then, you know, this was the first love scene we actually shot out of continuity in the movie, which was a telephone call. And again, I kept this slow dancing of the camera, this slow dolly shots. And at the same time, we had to convey these two separate worlds, you know, this world of the water. We got lucky with the fog that day, which was perfect for this. And, you know, when I was shooting Robin's side, which we shot first, I had Kevin in the newsroom in another little cubicle talking on the phone. And when we were shooting his side, I had her off the docks in another little room talking to him. I always feel that to get this kind of performances, you need the actors alive to feed to each other. Without it, everything just becomes mechanical and expected and predictable. And it was funny because this moment when she closes her eyes, the timer at Technicolor, you know, the timers in the lab just watch the movie without sound. So when he was watching that scene, he said, is she an alcoholic or something? Because why does she fall asleep in the middle of a phone call? So I thought that was very funny. But again, even in this phone call where they're separate, I felt, wow, I mean, this is great chemistry. And there was some humor in the scene, and it was just this two characters not knowing for certain where the other stands. And then came the scene, you know, this scene really, if you think about it, doesn't move the story forward. And we didn't know if it was important to the movie. And then when we saw it with an audience, it was one of the scenes where we got the most amazing humor.
I got a quarter.
The bantering and kind of teasing of each other was great. And
don't get into any fights or anything.
And Paul Newman came again with another improvised line at the end of the scene that nobody expected.
By my count, there's
after I said cut, everybody was laughing, and
that's a sorry
we tried it again, and it never worked with that kind of spontaneity, and Kevin's reaction to it was just a jewel. It comes at the end of the scene, so I'll just let it play for you to watch.
How'd you get to be so mean? See you in a week. The hell are you saying? Not with your plane ticket sitting on the seat here. Good dog.
So when I said cut, Kevin came to me and said, who does he think he is? And then we got a big laugh. And then it's he's coming for the first time inland to Chicago. And the kid is there.
I
felt it was important to create the uncomfortableness of the situation and at the same time keep the romance going on into the feelings.
I look great, though, right?
Okay.
Okay, is what I meant.
I tried to, in this moment, to keep the scenes without cutting too much. But then when we come to the dinner scene between the three of them, there's so much stuff happening that you just need to cover all those little moments. You know, the moment between Garrett and Teresa and Garrett and the little boy Jason's comments.
I don't know.
You know, when you're shooting anamorphic, you need a lot of distance between your actors and the camera. And so it makes it harder to move the camera when you're in small sets like this one. And so to capture this performances and the details of what they're doing, I felt the best way to do this is just to keep the camera static and to let the actors play the scene.
Yes, it was very sweet of you. Jason.
Excuse me.
You know, this was one of the scenes that I didn't know how well it was going to play. And then when we previewed the film, people just loved it. And that's when you're surprised, you know, you're gratified. With this scene, I felt that I wanted to create this feeling of this man being in this foreign space, not knowing very well what to do. He's not at home. So we went with this wider shot and let the scene played.
Shut up.
And then for when they're coming together in this more intimate moment, again, we went without any coverage, just did a two-shot and start moving in on them as they're coming closer. And so the awkwardness starts melting away, and the intimacy starts kicking in, and suddenly they're again together in this island, no matter where they are. But there's external circumstances that bring them a little bit apart, which is the sun, which keeps calling her. And so they have to wait. But at the same time, I felt, you know, he's out of his house, he's out of his past, of the things that remind him of his tortuous past. And so I told Kevin, just go lighter here. Feel what, it's like one of those moments that you just let go, that you're just happy. And suddenly you can be yourself with somebody that you don't know for very long. But that kind of feeling comfortable with each other is a big deal. I think that's one of the keys for me in terms of shooting a romance. You know, how you start from these extremes where there's an attraction, but there's two people that don't know each other and don't feel comfortable with each other, and little by little the ice starts melting. And then this was a big scene of fish out of the water, which also was about her secret. And suddenly the tension builds without saying anything about it. Is he going to find out that how she, you know, the letter she knew and she didn't tell him about it, and she's been keeping this secret from him? And I felt we need to play the tension, but we also need a lot of humor. This is a moment where humor can just explode. So I looked for all these details. And like this insert of this note that brings the humor into the scene. And he's just unaware. So this was a scene where I had to shoot so many angles, so much coverage, you know, so many points of views. It's his point of view, it's her point of view, it's Charlie and Lena's, the colleagues. And so these two people are together, but at the same time, he is in a world where he feels very much not at ease.
I don't know what I was expecting. I didn't realize that everybody's close.
Well, Teresa, this.
And so basically,
but apparently it is
the scene is about her nervousness, her tension, and how to get out of this situation without creating an explosion with him. And so she needs to get him out of there as fast as possible before the bomb explodes.
Well, I know there's a lake around here, son.
Yeah. Well, says that. Sensitive. If you get into any trouble.
Then the next scene that comes when Gary's sailing with Jason, that was a longer scene. We actually had a big part of the scene where they're sailing and he sees a woman on one of the boats. She's scrubbing the floors of the boat, the deck. And he has a flashback and he thinks it's Catherine.
Hi.
And again, that was scripted, and when you see the film, you realize, you know, that story's told, and it's gonna come back later, and you realize how unnecessary it is. So finally, the boy goes away, and they're together for the first time in Chicago. And there's this feeling of excitement. So this was the exterior in Chicago. The bedroom scene was shot in Maine on a set. And here, I wanted to create the feeling of the fish out of water finding a comfort zone where it doesn't matter where he is. What's important is that he's with her. And so little by little, the walls start crumbling down.
Well, is it what you expected?
And so the love scene that comes afterwards...
It's comforting.
You know, shooting love scenes in movies, it's... I think it's difficult in the sense that, you know, you've seen it so many times. How do you do it so that it keeps your interest going? And so for me, the challenge is to find what the scene is about from a dramatic and emotional point of view. In this case, I didn't want to do it about just the sex of it, but how these two feel so comfortable with each other and are surprised about feeling so vulnerable and open to each other, and they become like one. And so when we shot this scene, this part of the scene, we shot it on this set in Maine, but then our day was over and we didn't have time to finish it, so we had to recreate this set in the apartment in Portland where we finished shooting the lovemaking scene.
I just wanted to straighten up my room and light a candle, and I need to take a shower.
And again, we did it very, very tight shots, because I didn't want to go into the nudity of it, but into the faces, into the expressions, into the feelings. The other thing is, for the actors to feel comfortable in performing this scene, what I try to do is to design the scene in advance, to talk about exactly what are the actions we're going to do and what are the shots that I'm going to do. So once they're there, they don't feel like they're improvising. They don't feel like they're showing the crew how they make love or what they're going to do, which makes them very vulnerable. It's hard enough to do this kind of scenes with an audience, let alone perform them. And so we designed moment by moment, and I told them what my shots were going to be, and then things just flow very easily. And you also design your shots and your transitions, and so you know where you're going and everybody knows what they're doing, and things came together very fast. We shot this whole scene in about 3 hours. The next scene was not scripted. What the script said was they just... You have a transition, a dissolve, and she gets up and goes to the bathroom to take a shower. So this whole thing about the thunder was another of Kevin's idea. And I thought it was great. It brought this lightheartedness to the moment before all hell breaks loose. And I thought it was a sweet, nice moment. And so here we come to, you know, the turning point of the second act. He's going to find the bottle. He's going to find the letters. And this little scene took a lot of shots to do, a lot of time. We needed to establish Kevin where he was. We needed to do all these insert shots and all the close-ups. And again, in Anamorphic, this is one of the moments where you're grateful that you have a great, great focus puller, Jamie Barber, because your depth of field is just so narrow that if you miss it for a couple of inches, the shot is out of focus. And I must say, I rarely have to do another take because of focus, which is a very unusual case. Like this zoom shot, to get that focus is like, you know, magic. Kevin's performance also was just so right on. He told the story without any words. And this is the kind of scenes that I really like, where actors tell stories with a camera without having to explain them.
Oh, God. Garrett.
So this is the big moment where you realize this relationship is probably going to fall apart.
I found it on the shore. Garrett, wait. It came to me.
There is this shot.
You have to trust me. I
decided to do in a two shot. We didn't shoot any coverage. So the acting had to be perfect on both sides. You know, when you're shooting coverage, you can get his performance right in a different take and her performance right in a different take. But here you had to have them together. We shot a lot of takes before we got it. Then we had a piece of this scene where they're in the living room and the fight continues, which I realized we didn't need. And then we're back in Chicago on the location in the street. And this took a lot of work, you know. We had to pre-light the streets at night to be able to see the rain properly and to create this feeling of storm. Big rain towers outside pumping rain. And so this scene took us all night to shoot. It was a very difficult performance.
And it shouldn't matter what brought us together, Garrett.
It had to have the right intensity, but at the same time not be over the top. And then there was this moment where he hears about the third letter that we don't know about, that he doesn't know about. And I felt I needed to emphasize that. So I asked my DP to do this pushing this dolly in, but we were shooting with a 180 lens, which is a very long lens, again very difficult focus. That's the moment, and the focus was just perfect and it worked. And then we have this transition to the flashback, and I wanted to do it in a way that you didn't notice it until you were there you are. And so we designed it so that at the end of the previous shot, we went into black. And in the beginning of this, we came from black, so that it almost felt like one shot. And suddenly, in the middle of that panning, you're in a different location. And then, for the flashback, a lot of discussion went into it. We were shooting it in this big rock. As scripted, the scene took place on a dock. But when we saw the location, it didn't make sense. There was a dock outside the house. So we found this rock that was great. But we had, again, problems with the tides. We could only be on that rock for 4 hours. And then if we didn't leave, we had to spend the night there because the tide just was rising. And we decided to go with slow motion to give this feeling of timelessness. Of the outer and to do it the blue Atlantic, cold, bluish.
A person rich.
And then the question was, how do we come back in time? How do we go back to the present? That was something I was wrestling with, and finally came up with this shot that Dolly's with a hand comes to her face, Dolly's into his face, again a very difficult focus shot, and then dissolves into this shot of her dolling back, as if these two different worlds come together and they mesh, and then going to the window with the rain from her and finding him, and then you're back into the present. He's read the letter and he has a totally new understanding of what happened to Catherine, his dead wife.
I never knew what she wrote. She never came back from that day.
I dried her. I tried to keep her warm.
So this was a very emotional scene for Kevin. And when you do scenes like this, I try to prepare everything and get everything right so that when the actor starts going, you don't have, you know, correction of lighting or focus problems or anything. Because, you know, it's hard to capture that kind of acting in that way. And you try to make it the easiest you can for the actors. In terms of blocking, you know, we decided to shoot it from the back so that we had the windows in front and continue feeling the elements and the rain and the water, which is a theme in the movie. And so we shot the over the shoulders from the back as well. And then comes the transition to the separation. And so the next shot is a shot that we had that I shot in a helicopter. I didn't know what I was going to use it for. But when I came to the scene, I remembered that shot and I thought, oh, that's a perfect transition to going back to his world. And this shot was also shot for a different part of the movie, which was after the first night they sleep together but they don't make love, when she just joins him in bed. And suddenly I put it in this section of the movie, and it was one of those magical things where it just blends, and then we dissolve from him to her and they were just exactly in the same place. And it was one of those moments where you just gasp of how things just come together.
Hi. Hi.
Oh. Then this was one of the greatest days of shooting this movie. We had this long dialogue scene.
Is it called?
And when I prepped it,
no.
I designed this shot that started in this two shot with Ileana coming into the scene and moving, dolling around her to end in an over-the-shoulder shot of her to Robin. And I thought, I hope we can do it all in one shot and not shoot any coverage. And so I told Robin, let's not rehearse it, just run the lines to get the right timing, so I get the right timing for the dolly so that the camera ends at the right place at the right time. So we did that. And then this was take one. This was the perfect take. I did three takes, but the first take was perfect.
I was falling in love with Garrett, and I...
She never hit that performance again. And that's what I mean about, you know, when you're dealing with a performance kind of movie, the technique of the film has to serve also the performances. And so you do all the preparation that it takes and don't shoot film until you're ready, because the actress might be ready in the first take and you don't want to burn that special performance.
And I don't think he's ever going to be able to trust me now.
Don't you understand? We all have our own little lies and our little unspoken truths. And you just have to have a little faith.
Robin just created this moment of honesty and truth, and it almost felt like to me like one of those improvised Cassavetti kind of scenes.
He was holding her letter and he was reading it, and there was just so much pain, and he has so much love for her, you know.
Then after this scene, we had a scene where we actually see Garrett packing the paintings. And again, it was trivial. We just came straight to the meat. He comes to Catherine's family's house. And we found this location that was a little like a puzzle, because the geography of it didn't work. I mean, the window was not where the truck was, so we had to use a portable window and shoot that moment there and then move to another part of the house. And that's where in movies you can create a different geography to the one that actually exists. again, this was one more of those scenes without dialogue where there's these wordless exchanges and where the performance just carries you. And the choices of when to be close and when to keep away in a medium shot or wider. The casting of Catherine was also a very crucial thing, a very delicate factor in the movie. And so we saw a lot of actresses, a lot of women, and at the end of the day, what we thought was important was to have somebody who just felt like a common woman.
No.
A woman down to earth.
Other stories.
And
it's about time.
Kevin knew Susan Brightbill. He had worked with her in another movie, and I brought her to audition. And what I liked about her was that she had, you know, that kind of every woman, every day, not like this ghostly figure, but somebody, a woman who was flesh and bone, who was somebody that you felt she was a good person, but trustworthy, but just normal, not like a myth. Which it could become like that.
It may be that most of us write our own life story, making it up as we go along. But others seem to have lives.
This was a critical scene in the movie. It's a scene without dialogue where Catherine's brother comes in and they basically forgive each other without any words. And it was really important to get that hesitation in the beginning and the build to the moment where they finally know what... Basically, Garrett finds out why Johnny's in the boat shop.
I love this scene, but it's really... I think most guys, it's their favorite scene in the movie. From the script stage to, you know, the first screenings we had.
Yeah, guys really respond to this. To this moment of are we here for a fight and that turning into forgiveness and to coming together.
I think, you know, the idea of men working with their hands together on something, I think it goes way back in our kind of collective psyche. I think it's a very moving moment, and the music, I think this is some of the most beautiful music in the film. Our composer, Gabriel Yared, really understood this moment, and once the first time we saw it with the addition of the music, it was a very thrilling moment. The lighting is really beautiful in this scene as well. I remember the day we shot it, I walked into the set and I just could tell that the lighting was going to be exquisite on film. Caleb Deschanel really did a beautiful job on this scene.
I just remembered an anecdote about shooting that day. You know, there were those shots through the ribs of the boat, and when we're doing Johnny's eye, we couldn't see his eyes, and we were behind schedule, and basically Caleb showed me the shot and he said, you see, it doesn't work, the camera was on the other side of the boat. And I said, it's okay, we just have to move on, we have a schedule to make. And so basically suddenly I saw Caleb crawling inside the ribs of the boat and his assistant said, there goes Noah. And it was one of those moments where it was so important to get the right shot, and he put the camera inside the boat and finally captured those eyes of Johnny looking through the ribs.
Here's your mail there.
Thank you.
Sure.
The scene that follows was not scripted originally. We were actually already shooting, and I felt the Charlie-Teresa relationship never resolves. And so I talked to Denise DiNovi, and she said, you're right, it doesn't. And I said, well, maybe you can get Jerry to write a scene for this. And she explained to him what we needed, and he came up with a scene. And I thought it was really poignant. And it also resolved the fact that, you know, she was a researcher and now she became a journalist. She took the step forward somehow through this relationship. Even though she was going through painful situations, she was able to become what she really wanted and grow in her career and her life. And then he came up with that idea of, he brings her this present, which is his own photo. And so it also added humor into the movie at a place where we desperately needed it. Some of the people that have been teachers to me, directors that I've seen their work and had an influence, have been John Cassavetes, Mari Ritt, directors that, like Hal Ashby, that have captured amazing freshness and incredible, powerful performances as a slice of life where you believe that you're actually not seeing acting but real moments. And then also directors like Coppola and Marty Scorsese with his amazing genius of moving the camera and his way of directing scenes. And the Italian neorealism with that kind of simple way of telling beautiful human stories. De Sica, Rossellini, Visconti in his early times. This next scene was a very complicated scene, again, because it had a lot of things going on, a lot of points of views. And the location was, again, very complicated because it was all on these docks. The tides were moving very fast.
Go get them.
The boat that was going to be launched had to be launched at a certain time, otherwise our barges and everything were going to be buried in the sand. So we had three cameras working at once. And so at the end of the day, when I came to the cutting room, we had a lot of footage. And I told my editor, really what you have to focus on is, it's these two people that miss each other. It's these two people that are wanting to be with each other, but they miss.
Catherine.
They miss the moment. And this was Paul Newman's first day on the film.
Wish to God she was here today.
And it was amazing. The first shot we did with him was a shot that's coming
every day,
where he's walking toward her and she's walking away. So I did this dolly shot. And I asked Paul, we rehearsed it. I said, do you want marks? And he said, I don't need marks. And so we prepped it, we shot the first take, and he just knows the camera so well. I looked at my DP and we were both amazed. It was like he was glued to the camera. He knew exactly when to turn, where to stop. It's a shot coming after. I'll tell you exactly which one. The music was very important here. I wanted the music to be her point of view, her moment, her mood, her feeling. So there's, you know, the moment between Catherine's family and Garrett and the moment of Teresa, and this is the shot that I was talking about. And this was a continuation of the same shot. And that shot of the boat landing on the water, we barely got it right before the tide just killed us. Now with this next scene, we got lucky with the weather because I wanted it to be a little cloudy, a little melancholic. And
my dad said you were there.
It's really the last moment that these two people are together in the movie. So it was a very important scene. When I first got involved with the picture, I spoke with Nicholas Sparks, and he was really gracious. I mean, he said, I read Jerry's adaptation of it, and it's really a great adaptation. And I think Jerry really was very faithful to the book. There were some things changed, like the addition of Catherine's parents and brother, which were not in the book. But basically, the structure and the story was very much the same. And Nicholas, at some point, came and gave us feedback for the ending, and he had a couple of good ideas. He came to the set and visited us, but he was very unusual in the sense that most writers hate whatever you do in a movie, and he was always very appreciative and collaborative.
You know, when I began the development of the script before anyone was involved, and it was really just me and Jerry DePego, the screenwriter, and Nicholas Sparks, you know, I wanted to keep him involved. I've done several book adaptations, and I really feel like authors deserve to be involved. You know, if it wasn't for them, none of us would be involved in the movie. So I sent him every draft, and I asked his opinion about things, and he did speak with Jerry, and then he continued to speak with Kevin and Jim and Luis as the whole process went on. And so I think because he felt included, he had a very positive outlook on the whole process. He also is a very pragmatic person. You know, he was a businessman before he was a novelist, and I think he had a pretty, you know, realistic understanding that it's not going to be an exact adaptation. But as Luis has said, we really stuck to the story of the book. I think if we had changed the ending, he would have been upset if, you know, we had done major changes like that, but we didn't. We really just fleshed it out a little bit more and enhanced the plot to have it sort of fulfill screenwriting and screenplay, you know, requirements. And I did get his input all the way along.
Thanks.
Why do you always sit in the same place?
Historically, there's been a genre of film of the, you know, unrequited or tragic love story. And they're some of my favorite films and some of the greatest films ever made. I think we haven't had as many in the last, you know, couple of decades because I think people went through kind of a cynical phase about love and romance. But I think that has ended. The pendulum has swung back where, you know, people want to believe in true love and the power of love. And I think we're seeing more films that illustrate that. And I just had a feeling that, like the Bridges of Madison County, that this would really touch people and inspire them to believe in love. It was also a film for a very wide audience, you know, from very young people to very old people. It's not a film that sort of excludes anybody. It has a message, theme that's resonant really for any human being. You know, I was grateful for Bridges of Madison County because there was a time in the script development process where they contemplated making it a happy ending. And there was a huge uprising on the internet of people who loved the book and said, you know, we don't want you to change the ending, and they went with the ending, and the film was very successful. And I kept pointing to that when people would say, how can you have a sad ending to this movie? Because I think that that's what the movie is all about, and without it, it would not be as powerful. So I always felt very strongly that we had to retain the ending, and I was prepared, you know, to fight for it. When we had our first research screening with an audience in Thousand Oaks, California, people were actually grateful for the ending, and many of their comments that they were happy to see a non-Hollywood, non-cliche ending. And, you know, they really liked it. There's always a few people who say, oh, I wish they walked off into the sunset together. But the vast, vast majority of people, they like the ending the way it is, and they do garner a lot of meaning out of it, that this is part of life, and that people must, you know, can go on and do go on and find love and heal after tragedy. There's very few people who are not touched by these kind of things in their own lives.
You're my boy. It's not your business.
What?
I said it's not your business.
Turn around.
Hey! Turn around.
This was a crucial scene in the movie. We shot it over the course of two nights. So the first night we finished about 4 in the morning. And everybody left, the crew left, and I stayed back with a video assist guy. And I asked him to play what we already shot to see if we were in the right track. So I spent about an hour and a half just looking at all the takes we did. I was at this dark diner by the docks, by the water. Finally, we finished, and I told them, okay, you can turn it off. Suddenly, I heard a noise in the diner and some steps. Looked around, and there was Paul Newman. And he had been sitting at a corner looking at the monitor as well with me. He had stayed behind, and he wanted to look at it as well. And he says, it's not that bad, is it? And I laughed. And it was such a nice feeling to be there with Paul.
She came back because it was, she found out she belonged here too.
5:30 at the time, and the sun was starting to come out. He said, why don't we take a walk? And we started walking on the docks, letting the sunrise come. And it was one of the most beautiful moments of the movie. You know, one of those memorable moments where you actually watch the sunrise with Paul Newman.
Stick with it. And I will shut up and leave you alone.
This is an interesting moment because I remember we tried this in a few different spots. When he finds the compass, was it more moving if he finds this gift from Teresa before or after, or, you know, where is it? Because it is a turning point moment when he decides to write the letter of farewell to Catherine, and just goes to show you how different things can feel in terms of the order, you know, in the film. And I remember we went back and forth a few times, and it did work the best here.
Yeah, also, you know, the next scene that follows when he's writing the letter to Catherine, at one point we tried it with voiceovers so that we would know what he was writing. And you said we should get rid of the voiceover because it's better to remember to let the audience find out much later in the movie. I had the question whether the storm needed to be framed within that context. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's another thing that shows how different things can feel. I think I found this moment of him writing the letter more moving to imagine what was in his head rather than hearing his words here and then hearing them again later with Teresa. The letter later, when Teresa reads the letter and we hear his words, his voice for the first time, we're hearing them with her. We're experiencing that moment with her. We're not ahead of her, we're with her. And I think that really made it work.
Hey! You heading for blue water?
Again, this moment, I remember we tried the movie without this moment at all because we thought this tipped off his death too much. The fact that they were, you know, waving goodbye. And I'm so glad we put it back in because it's just such a moving moment.
Yes, and even though it probably does tip it off a bit to the audience, it still works emotionally.
Yeah.
And it just thrusts the next scene, which is the storm sequence. I mean, this was a major, probably one of the biggest challenges technically in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We had a second unit at sea for a couple of months trying to get the weather, and basically the weather never came except once there was a big squall and it was too strong and they all ended up in the water. So we were thinking of shooting this scene out in the open sea, and we never could do it.
You could make another movie about how we tried to shoot this sequence. It would be an interesting film. It was just so difficult. We shot the film in Maine, and the weather there is very unpredictable, and the wind and the waves. And, you know, to shoot any film, I've done a couple of movies where I hope never to do it again, where, you know, you're dealing with boats on the water. And it's just, you know, it's near to impossible because you have to have so many elements all come together correctly. And it's a completely uncontrolled situation, and you know, it never seems to gel exactly the right way. The way we ended up really getting the meat of the scene was on an enormous tank at Universal.
Yeah, so there's these wide shots that we shot really without rain in Maine in the sea, and then we added visual effects of rain and spray and white water, like in that shot. And then this shot, for example, was shot in the tank. Some shots were green screened and other shots were shot in the tank with actual rain and spray. This is where the tank work starts.
The tank was kind of a tourist attraction for the week that we were shooting for Hollywood. So many people came out to see it because it was just amazing. We had these enormous fans and wave machines, and it was actually really tough for the actors because it was so intense and realistic. The pressure of the hoses and the water machines and the wave machines was just astonishing.
Well, the key thing to have this look was getting jet engines, which were throwing a lot of spray, which would block the backing so that, as you see, you don't see where the ocean ends. There's just this infinite feeling like out in the open sea when you have a storm, which really sold it as if it was shot out in the open sea. The other thing was we had to put black silks above so that we would covered Studio City, it's always sun. We had to move them with big cranes as the sun moved through the day. And then we had big wave makers to create these waves in the water and guys on jet skis moving and creating this kind of turmoil in the water.
It was really something. And this little girl was such a trooper. There's a stunt, she has a stunt double, but she was in there for a lot of the heavy stuff. And you know, as a mother, I was just a nervous wreck all day, but she was, she really went for it. She was incredible.
Right. And we also had five cameras shooting all the time because we have very limited time. So we had a very defined storyboard. We knew exactly what pieces of action we were shooting, and then shooting on different lenses, different angles, different sizes. And amazingly enough, it all came together and matched with what we did in the open sea.
The mechanism also for the boat tipping over was really an amazing feat of engineering, to have a boat of that size move when we needed it to move and tip over in that way, take after take.
And all of them did their own stunts. Kevin did his own stunts. The little girl did too. It was pretty amazing.
The music here as well. This is one of the longest pieces of score, I think, in any film that I can think of. And it's really like writing a movement of a symphony. And Gabriel, I think he hit, you know, just the right tone for this, because if you wrote very heavy kind of action music for the movie, I think it would have been less of an emotional experience. He wrote a kind of almost religious, spiritual tone of music, and I think it gave it a lot of depth.
Which is one of the reasons we shot it in slow motion, to play more the emotion of the scene rather than like your typical action sequence.
And the mayor himself.
Sorry to interrupt you, so there's a phone call for you.
Can you take a message?
It's urgent.
Again, here we had the same kind of question. Should we hear the news of his death with Teresa? Should we, you know, hear it with, experience it with Dodge and then Teresa? And once again, and it appeared that if we heard it with her, our protagonist, that was the way that it was the most effective.
And also, this was interesting because I wanted Paul Newman to be on the telephone line when we actually shot this, and we had a schedule problem. Robin basically said, I don't need him, I can do the scene on my own, but my feeling as a director is that the actors really needed to get that emotional thrust from Paul. And so we did it with Paul Newman on the line, and that's how we got this incredible performance. That's where sometimes actors say, I can do it, but you know that they're still going to do it better if you have both people working together.
Well, especially if you're lucky enough to have Paul Newman on the other end of the line. I mean, he had such a sadness in his voice. And I mean, I remember take after take, Robin did an extraordinary performance in every single take.
The day we shot this scene, we had very choppy waters, so I lost 25% of my crew to seasickness. But Paul was amazing. He was a mensch. He never floundered. This shot, we did many, many takes, and at the end, when we were done, I suddenly realized, you know, it feels a little over the top. It's the moment that comes after this. I felt a little too melodramatic, so I told Paul, I think we need to redo this. And let me tell you why. He said, don't tell me why. I know exactly what you're talking about. Let me just do it again. So I told the crew, we're going back. We're going to redo it again. And so he came up with this one take that ended up in the film. And that's when you feel, oh, I'm so happy I went with my instincts and didn't worry about the schedule, because at the end of the day, it's going to stay forever, you know. And then the scene that follows, which is almost the end of the movie, was a very delicate scene to shoot. She arrives, she's gotten the news. Paul said to me, you know, here I'm really just serving her, serving this moment. I don't do much. And Paul has that amazing quality. He knows when it's his moment and he knows when it's not. And he's a very generous actor. And he's very supportive to the other actors. And so we blocked the scene, and the moment that's coming after, when she sees the bottle and finds a letter in it, Caleb, my DP, said, let's shoot it against the windows, because it's going to give us a beautiful light. So we shot in this direction. Basically, we started with a static shot. Just put the camera there after this cut. And we did two takes, and suddenly I felt, this has no power. And so I said, we need to start again and do a dolly shot, moving diagonally. Caleb said, we're on a 180 lens. How on earth are you going to get that shot and focus again? And this was the shot I was talking about in the beginning, that Jamie Barber, our focus puller, did an amazing job, because we're moving and moving. You barely feel it, but we're just getting closer and closer to her to get the impact of what this final letter is conveying. And her timing had to be also perfect to fit the words into the scene. And when we finished this whole setup, I was just very moved by her performance and how it all came together. And I said to Robin, you know, you've just spoiled me. It's so amazing working with an actress like that, that just gives you this moment with such truth. And then came the follow-up. So this was the big moment of the breakup, and then she goes to the nook and finds that he's changed it. Catherine's things are gone. And I felt, we can't repeat the same tone again. We have to lead to the ending of the movie where she, in spite of the pain, finds a place of peace and gratefulness. So we did different takes, and then I said to Robin, find something more peaceful at the end, acceptance. And was it worth it? I felt that we needed to convey at the end of the movie that it was not just a tragedy, but that the journey took her to a different place and left her with somewhere to go.
And I'm still blessed because
and so we had the big question of how to end the movie, and
if I tell you I love her,
we felt we needed to bring a voiceover of her at the end to just get a feeling of that she was where she was, what emotional state she ended the movie, so that the audience could walk out with something to hold on. Also, I felt that we needed to close with Paul Newman's character there, because there were these two people that were going through this hard moment, but they had each other. At the same time, I didn't want to do it in close-ups. I felt that was too modeling, too sentimental. It was just this two people in the middle of this vast, beautiful landscape. And so I felt I needed to end the movie with the power of nature.
Loss is a part of my journey, but it has also shown me what is precious. So has a love for which I can only be grateful.
And with her words. Thank you for watching the film. I hope you really enjoyed it. For us, it was a great experience making it. I had a great time working with Denise, with my actors, with everybody. It was a really good experience, and I hope you don't see it only once, but several times.
Many, many times. I hope it is that kind of film where people, you know, it becomes beloved, because it was a lot of love went into making the film. I think Luis turned out to be the perfect director for the movie. It was really even better than the movie I envisioned when I very first time I read the book, and it's a film I'm very proud of. Thank you for watching.
She presses wrinkles from her.